We're breaking down the COVID booster shot rollout and what's in store for kids. We have a pair of physicians from the Medical College of Wisconsin fielding your COVID questions on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has authorized Pfizer's shot for some groups, and news outlets are reporting that the FDA is set to dramatically expand the use of COVID booster shots soon. Have you gotten your COVID booster? Did you get a J&J vaccine and wonder about the possibility of mixing and matching vaccines? We've been hearing about that. 800-642-1234. Dr. Frank Zhu is a pediatric infectious disease physician and medical director of infection control and prevention at Children's Wisconsin. Dr. Zhu, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Good morning. We also have Dr. Mary Beth Graham with us, an internal medicine and infectious disease specialist at the Medical College of Wisconsin, where she's a professor of medicine, associate chief in the Division of Infectious Diseases. Dr. Graham, welcome back.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, let's start with you, Dr. Graham. You know, the death of Colin Powell this week, the former Secretary of State, and, you know, reminds us how dangerous COVID is to older people and to people who are immunocompromised. His death at 84, even though fully vaccinated. Can you reflect a bit on this demographic that remains vulnerable to infections despite being vaccinated?
Well, the key thing with General Powell, and I just found this out yesterday reading on the internet, he had a history of multiple myeloma. And so not only was he in an age group that would have a decreased immune response to vaccine, but having multiple myeloma, it's a particular bloodstream malignancy that can significantly decrease the way the body can make an immune response to a vaccine. And when I read that, I thought, oh, that's, and I've taken care of plenty of patients at Medical College of Wisconsin Frederick Hospital who have had multiple myeloma, have gotten their vaccines, and have not been able to mount an antibody response. So those certain conditions could, I mean, that probably played a huge part in his ability to fight off the infection.
I see. I see. Dr. Zhu, you're a pediatrician. I'd imagine you're fielding a lot of questions about kids getting vaccinated. What is the latest that you can share about a COVID vaccine for kids?
Right. So, I mean, currently the Pfizer vaccine is approved for children above the age of 12 and above. And Pfizer has submitted the vaccine for ages 5 to 11 for emergency use authorization in late September. So we'll have to see the FDA and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, hasn't yet approved that, but they do have a meeting this week and then meeting in early November. So we'll have to see if they come up in those meetings.
Yeah. And, you know, children are not just small adults here. What needs to be different about a child's version of the COVID vaccine from what you would give an adult?
Right. Generally, the difference is to make sure that the doses you give to children are both immunogenic and are sort of adequate. So they may give sort of smaller doses to children since, you know, pediatrics and children are generally, can be smaller in size. So for the 12 to sort of 18-year-olds, they're currently given the same dose as adults. But for the 5 to 11-year-olds, they're being recommended a dose that is about a third of the dose to adults. So it's 10 micrograms instead of 30 for Pfizer. And at least Pfizer's data, they say that it has a similar immunogenic response. But of course, the ACIP has not yet reviewed the data and it's not public yet.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Frank Zhu, a pediatric infectious disease specialist. Dr. Mary Beth Graham is here, internal medicine and infectious disease specialist, both from the Medical College of Wisconsin, fielding your questions about the COVID vaccine and boosters, 800-642-1234. David is joining us from California. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning. And believe it or not, I'm calling you from the safe city of San Francisco.
Ah.
Our death count, I'm not sure if we've reached 650 yet, but there are other counties out here. Kevin McCarthy's district is, what is it, 2,500 dead or so? A couple of the reddest counties, Orange County, they're over 5,000 dead. We're 600 because we made sure the homeless got vaccinated. We made sure that everybody got a free test as soon as they could possibly get it. You know, Glide Church out here was doing free tests last autumn when Kaiser was refusing people for months to get a test.
So you really ramped up where you are, ramped up that public health effort is what I'm hearing, and got people vaccinated, David.
Right. Well, my bigger question is, how many variants are there now? You know, there used to be just one disease, then there were three variants, and now it's gotten stupid. And I'm worried about the patent rights.
Okay. Well, David, I just want to pause there and allow Dr. Graham to address variants and what is known. Dr. Graham, go ahead.
So all viruses mutate. So, I mean, this is just a natural thing. So this is an RNA virus. Whenever it replicates, it is going to have changes in its genetic code. And every single time it changes, it potentially could be a variant. But what we track from the CDC and the WHO are things like variants of interest, variants of concern, variants of high consequence. And so even though the virus is always changing, because again, that's a natural process when the virus replicates, if they change themselves in such a way that they can either change how infectious they are to people or how they would potentially respond to a vaccine, that's when they get on people's radar with regards to being a variant. So the predominant variant in the United States is Delta, mm-hmm. and has been for several months. Outside the United States, we've got Mu, we have Lambda. Those, though, do not seem to be spreading the same way that Delta did. But again, could they do that? Yes, they potentially could, because again, as this virus replicates, it has the chance to mutate and again, change itself so it's more fit to spread from person to person. And even though you have Delta, there are subgroups of Delta. So Delta isn't just one virus. There are dozens and dozens of subgroups of Delta.
Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Zhu, I want you to be able to jump in here in that, you know, I think I was hearing from Dr. Fauci that you don't want to allow this virus any opening to replicate because then it mutates and every mutation could, you know, give us a new challenge. What do you see there?
Right. And Dr. Fauci is certainly correct in that. And this is sort of emphasizes the need to sort of have a global perspective in terms of preventing COVID spread and vaccination and to sort of minimize the amount of viruses that are actively replicating and prevent the development of new variants. Because remember, with Delta, it emerged rather rapidly over the course of this year. It was sort of first found in India, where it really ravaged that population and then spread globally. So it really just shows that it can, you know, a variant from across the globe can very rapidly take over here in the U.S.
We have pediatric infectious disease specialist Frank Zhu, infectious disease specialist Mary Beth Graham here, both of the Medical College of Wisconsin. They're fielding your questions about the COVID vaccine and boosters. Are you still waiting to schedule your initial round of the COVID vaccine? What has got you on the fence about it? Have the children 12 and up in your household been vaccinated? What do you want to know about kids and COVID? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. An immunization advisory panel for the CDC is set to meet tomorrow to discuss COVID booster shots. We're discussing booster vaccines with a pair of physicians on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. An advisory panel for the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, they voted unanimously last week to recommend the agency authorize a booster dose for the J&J COVID vaccine for people 18 and over. Still time to talk COVID boosters. What you want to know, 800-642-1234. We have pediatrician Frank Zhu and infectious disease physician Mary Beth Graham. Dr. Graham, you know, the FDA authorizing Pfizer's shot for some groups, likely hearing a green light for boosters from Moderna and J&J soon. So who can get a booster now?
So with the Pfizer vaccine, which is our only FDA-approved vaccine currently on the market, the approval for the booster is for those individuals over the age of 65, for our immunocompromised patients. What is interesting is that the FDA advisory panel originally only suggested it for those two groups, but what happened after the vaccine was full FDA approved, the ACIP suggested that it also be broadened to frontline healthcare workers, to grocery store workers, to EMTs, et cetera. So that's an entire group that's also being recommended to get the booster at least 6 months after their second dose of the Pfizer vaccine that they received. What is now being considered by the FDA, and again, those are both under emergency use authorization, and they're looking to give emergency use authorization for the boosters for both Moderna and also for J&J. Mm-hmm. For the J&J, it's actually interesting. They are suggesting on that one, what's been recommended by the advisory committee is that anybody who received J&J, anybody, no caveats with it, receive another J&J shot within 2 months of having received the first one. That's what went through the advisory committee. And that has to do with the lower antibody titers that they saw with J&J as compared to initially as compared to the mRNA vaccines. And for Moderna, it very much replicates or looks very similar to Pfizer in terms of what has been recommended is over the age of 65, immunocompromised, and those individuals who are at high risk or who have jobs who would put them potentially at risk of exposure. So again, healthcare workers, our police force, our frontline EMTs, et cetera. Yeah.
So a smaller group there. And, you know, we've also heard, Dr. Graham, about mixing and matching vaccines, you know, not authorized yet. But what is your sense there of what could happen? Like, you know, I got a J&J or Moderna and then I could get a Pfizer booster.
So this is fascinating. I mean, the immunology of this is fascinating. So I don't want people to take away that J&J is a crummy vaccine. What's interesting about it is even though antibody titers were low to begin with, if you look over time for the other parts of the immune response, whether we call it cellular immunity, humoral immunity, antibodies versus T cells, the J&J does excellent. What is interesting though, with the J&J, in the studies that have been done is if you just look at antibody titers, if you boost with another adenovirus vaccine, which the J&J is adenovirus vaccine based, you got about a fourfold rise in your amount of antibody. If you boosted with Pfizer, I think it was something around 17 to 20 fold increase in antibody titer. If you boosted with a full dose of the Moderna, it was 76 times higher. Wow. I mean, it was just phenomenal. So what they are noticing is that, and there have been other papers reported, if you've got Pfizer being boosted with Moderna, Moderna being boosted with Pfizer, is that because these are different, and again, as Dr. Zhu pointed out, there's 10 micrograms of the mRNA antigen in the Pfizer, there's 100 in the Moderna, and that may be why it acts a little bit differently. And for their booster, they're looking at a half dose, which would be 50 micrograms, but they're not exactly the same. So if you mix vaccines, you may have a more heterogeneous immunologic response. This is kind of reflective, though, of what they're seeing with people who had COVID previously. So, I'd be interested if people would call in on this, people who previously had COVID, let's say last fall, who then get the vaccine, there is a lot in the literature right now talking about hybrid immunity or super immunity.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
those individuals who previously had COVID, who then got vaccinated, regardless of which vaccine, but I think most of the studies were done with the mRNA vaccines, is that there is this very robust, very, again, heterologous immune response that may be broader and may be better to prepare somebody for variants if they do arise.
We're talking with Dr. Mary Beth Graham, Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control for Froedtert Hospital. Dr. Frank Zhu is here, Medical Director of Infection Control and Prevention at Children's Wisconsin. Let's go to Jody in Appleton. Jody, hi, and you have concerns about your granddaughter who is 17 and had a Pfizer vaccine.
Yes, she had, her whole family got COVID last fall. A little time after that, she got really sick again, and she was tested, and it said COVID again. She ended up getting a Pfizer vaccine. I think it was May, May. She broke out head to toe. I took care of her for 3 or 4 days. She had hives. I ran her to the pediatrician. They put her on steroids for 3 days, but that she just continued breaking out, so they extended it to cover a week. They said she can't have her second Pfizer. Her parents just took her to an allergist a couple weeks ago, and they ran allergy tests, and she's allergic to a lot of things, but he also said she shouldn't have the second one. So, like, I'm wondering as a grandmother, like, is there a test for antibodies? I mean, what's her future look like?
Jody, thank you for explaining the situation. Dr. Zhu, go ahead.
Right. So with any vaccine, and specifically with Pfizer and Moderna recently with the COVID vaccine, sort of allergic reactions are certainly possible to it. And if you remember, originally in early December when they were first authorized for emergency use, there were reported cases of significant allergic reactions that were rare. And those turned out to be about 5 per million doses is what the current data has sort of shown when they've reviewed it. So for your granddaughter, it seems like she had a significant allergic reaction, but not anything that, you know, stopped her from breathing or was anything life-threatening. But because of that, it's not recommended that she gets any more vaccinations of that type. As for measuring immunity, currently, while it's a little bit of a mixed bag, while antibody tests have been used generally to sort of look at immune response, they're not really a effective way to look at how efficacious the vaccine is in preventing disease yet, although likely a higher antibody would mean you're more productive. Mm-hmm. So the CDC doesn't really recommend you use antibody levels as a measure of vaccine effectiveness because, like Dr. Graham said, there are a variety of other factors such as your T-cell response and things like that aren't measured by antibodies, which also play a role and are made in response to vaccination.
Jody, thank you. Let's go to Dave in Milltown now. Dave, hi. What is your question?
Hello.
Yes, hi.
I had a COVID episode in April of 2021. I had fever symptoms. I was very fatigued, and the symptoms persisted for about 2 weeks. What I want to know is my natural immunity superior to the COVID vaccine? Do I have to get a COVID vaccine now?
Let's take that to Dr. Graham. Go ahead, Dr. Graham.
So you will have some level of natural immunity after having had it. Most of the studies that are out there suggest that people who get, again, that vaccine after having had COVID have a much better immune response and, again, can have what is referred to as this hybrid immunity that may protect you even further. So the recommendation, even if you had COVID, and we know that there is natural immunity, is that we would strongly suggest people also get the vaccine to bolster that immunity and make it even stronger.
Very quickly, Dr. Graham, Dick in Watertown has had the vaccine and wonders, will the booster tell our body not to work so hard?
No. I guess. I mean, that's actually a very interesting question.
Yeah.
I would say that, I mean, the issue is that when you get vaccines, is that you're priming it so that you've got the arms of your immune system ready to fight if it sees a pathogen come into you, regardless of what type of vaccine it is, whether it's the pneumococcal vaccine, the influenza vaccine, et cetera. And essentially it essentially arms you better so that you're better to fight. So you can fight more efficiently. Let's put it that way. You can fight much, much more efficiently because your body's going to figure out how to fight something in general, if you've got a good immune system, but that vaccine will help.
Thank you both for joining us. Dr. Mary Beth Graham, internal medicine and infectious disease specialist. Dr. Frank Zhu, pediatric infectious disease physician, both at the Medical College of Wisconsin, here on the Ideas Network.